From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Carlos.
Berkeley.
Potrero Hill.
Bernal Heights.
Sharp Park.
Park Pacifica.
Vivo in Union City.
Coming up, why it's important for hotels to train their employees to recognize and report the signs of sex trafficking.
People have been coming and going from that room. Their Do Not Disturb sign has been up the whole week they've been with us.
Then, when children are sexually exploited, and what the Oakland Unified School District is doing about it.
You know, we would see certain behaviors, or kids would just kind of disappear, or they wouldn't be in school, and we became concerned about it.
And we'll learn the story behind this week's audiograph mystery sound.
This is burning money as part of the offering.
That and more today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. We're starting today with the latest installment of our series on public safety in the Bay Area, a project by the students in our journalism training program, the KALW Audio Academy.
What does public safety mean to you?
The city is not prepared unless everyone in the city is prepared for a disaster.
So you owe a person sex if you've been flirting with them?
No.
It's really about stabilizing your entire life.
International Boulevard in East Oakland is known as the Track, the place where people buy and sell sex. But a lot of the sex trade happens off the track, out of sight, in hotels. And a lot of it is not among consenting adults. It's forced prostitution or sex trafficking. In Oakland, anti-sex trafficking groups and local law enforcement are trying to enlist hotel operators to help combat the trade. KALW's Shireen Adil went to find out more.
The Oakland Courtyard Marriott is in downtown Oakland. It's known to cater to business travelers. In the lobby, people get on and off the elevators. A family of tourists waits in line at the registration desk. It's a scene most of us are familiar with. But under the surface of this normal hotel activity, something criminal could be occurring. Sex trafficking. It's not always obvious what's going on beyond the lobby.
Whether there is a lot of video equipment set up in the room, whether there's a use of a ton of towels, and it seems like more than one person's been staying in that room.
Betty Ann Hagenaw is executive director at the Bay Area Anti-Trafficking Coalition. Her organization is working to broaden efforts to stop sex trafficking beyond the usual law enforcement approach. They want to recruit eyes and ears right where these crimes are taking place, at the approximately 1,500 hotels in the Bay Area.
Not only are front desk staff and hotel housekeeping staffs on the front lines of seeing not only who checks in, but who they check in with, how they check in, whether they use cash or credit or are willing to show their ID, but also the usage of the rooms, housekeeping, reporting what they're finding in the garbage cans.
The Oakland Courtyard Marriott is one of many hotels in the Bay Area that's already participated in trainings to recognize and report sex trafficking. One thing the training does is teach employees how to work together. From the front desk to housekeeping to security, each department might see different warning signs that add up to a big picture.
And it seems a little bit odd because people have been coming and going from that room. Their Do Not Disturb sign has been up the whole week they've been with us.
Hagenaw says a lot of hotel workers may have heard the term sex trafficking, but they don't know much about it.
And then they just go through a short training, even 40 to 50 minutes of training, and the amount of personnel that at the end of that go, I think I've seen something, or I've had clients come in and ask me about the massage parlor next door or a restaurant down the street that seems pretty sketchy.
Marriott International is one of many in the tourism industry that has signed a code of conduct called the Ending Child Prostitution and Trafficking, or ECPAT Code. That means they've pledged to train all their employees everywhere. Still, there's a lot of stigma around the issue. The Marriott turned down multiple interview requests. Hagenaw says getting hotels to really commit isn't always easy.
Because if they were to say, oh, sign us up to that code, or yes, we should have a training for our employees, to some extent, it's an admittance that you actually have some potentially illicit activity happening on your properties.
There are some hotels in Oakland where that's a real and obvious problem, according to Elizabeth Smith. She was a victim of domestic child sex trafficking and is now an advocate for commercially sexually exploited youth.
I mean, on those TVs, there's like free porn, like on the channels. And
they used to not have mirrors above the bed, but now all of a sudden they do. And so it's like, why, like in an area like this, why would you do that? Well, because now there more people are going to come to their hotels for that specific reason.
Smith says it doesn't just happen at some motels or hotels. It could happen anywhere. It's just a matter of price.
If a child is being exploited and the exchange happens in a car, it's not going to cost as much. Whereas if you go to a motel room, it's going to cost a little bit more. If you go to a hotel room, then it's going to be more expensive. So it's all about where you're purchasing the girl from.
And unfortunately, there are people buying and selling exploited youth in a lot of places.
It's sad that we just have these vulnerable children right in the middle of it, who are usually the ones getting penalized in some type of way.
They come from all parts of our community, and that they are victims.
Teresa Drenick is the spokesperson from the Oakland District Attorney's Office, which also does anti-trafficking education. Drenick used to be an attorney. She says her very first case opened her eyes to the issue, a young girl who was arrested for prostitution.
I could see her face in front of me as though I met her yesterday. She was about 13 years old and had really, really long, curly, wavy red hair and really pale skin with freckles. She looked like sort of Little Orphan Annie.
The girl had gone out with friends when she was abducted. She was held for days in a motel room.
And she was... her clothes were taken from her, and she was forced to dress in really sexy clothes. And she was put on the corner and then into the hotel room and then the corner and the hotel room.
Drenick had to ask the girl exactly what happened and what she did with the men who purchased her.
And I just will never forget that this, you know, her, the blush that came over her just sort of from her neck, and it rose up over her face of a teenager who was so upset and so embarrassed. And she just, you could see physically that it was almost making her sick to her stomach and sick inside to talk about what had happened to her. And I think that for me was just eye-opening. I was probably all of 26 years old at the time, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Believing it was just the first step for Drenick. Now she works with the Human Exploitation and Trafficking Unit, also called Heat Watch, out of the Oakland DA's office. They collaborate with law enforcement, prosecute offenders, and hold trainings to raise public awareness. Drenick says that awareness is the most important step in combating sex trafficking.
If you see something and in your gut you know it's not right, and there are red flags there that are telling you something is wrong, don't just sit back and think someone else will take care of the problem.
That advice is working. According to the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, reports of human trafficking in California have doubled since 2012. It's not necessarily that there is more trafficking, but more likely that people are noticing and doing something about it. And that's a good start. But for Drenick and others working on this issue, it's just that. The end goal is for sex trafficking to be completely eradicated. In Oakland, I'm Shireen Adil for Cross Currents.
Shireen Adil is a student reporter in KALW's Audio Academy. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hana Baba. When it comes to fighting sexual exploitation, advocacy groups and law enforcement do a lot, and so can schools. The Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children, or CSEC, can mean a lot of things: forced prostitution, pornography, the sex trafficking of minors. The FBI has listed the San Francisco metro area as a high-intensity area for child prostitution, and a lot of that activity takes place in Oakland. Cynthia DeMon is CSEC lead for the Oakland Unified School District. District officials had noticed that some of their own students were being exploited outside of school. So DeMon trained staff to support students and also address the issue in classrooms. KALW's Liz Mack talked with her to learn more about what the school district is doing.
So we spend a lot of time with other people's children, educating them. And what we found is that sometimes, we would see certain behaviors, or kids would just kind of disappear, or they wouldn't be in school. And we became concerned about it, and we didn't know what was going on. And when we started doing digging, we found out that some of our kids were being exploited.
Can you talk a little bit more about what it was that the teachers or the school officials were noticing?
We mostly see it in the middle and high, and that's just because kids are able to articulate and the behaviors look different, right? And kids would be absent for long periods of time, and we didn't know why. We would see changes in appearance, like dressing more a little older and more provocatively, but not like the normal adolescent, I'm going to try out some new outfits because I want to pretend I'm 18, but in a really sexual degrading nature. I'm sorry, it's hard to talk about sometimes. It doesn't ever get easier. Because the average age is 12 to 14 for entry. So, we'd see these young girls just not coming to school, and we wouldn't know where they were. They would isolate and feel like you could tell when a child is holding a secret sometimes, and we would see that. Children would say things that would catch our ears. And we'd ask questions like, what did you mean by that when you said that? Who was that person?
Can you talk about more of the day-to-day of what you do as CSEC lead?
Okay, yeah. So just this morning as well, I got a phone call from a principal who said, I think I have a child who's being sexually exploited. So that's pretty typically what I hear, and I hear it from principals, from most people who've had training or have someone who's been trained on their site. So they give me a call or an email or a text, and I call them back and I get the details of what's going on, and guide them through making a CPS report, and guide them through making a referral to MISSY. We make a lot of referrals to MISSY. It's an organization that works with kids, and they do outreach, and they do case management, and they provide therapy, really comprehensive services. And then usually I help coordinate services at the site. So we have these intervention teams that meet usually once a week or once every other week. And if a kid is having some challenges or if something's going on, then the team will get together, and they're multidisciplinary, and they'll try to come up with some solutions.
Why are we talking to teachers and training teachers? Why aren't we, bringing people who are already trained like you? What is the benefit of that?
Of training teachers? It increases the support network of the child. So if only I'm trained and only I can respond, then that child only has one person in Oakland Unified who can help them. But if teachers and staff are trained, then that child has many people who can help them. Teachers spend a lot of time with kids, and they get to know them in ways that I don't. And they're more likely to see signs. They're more likely to notice changes. And if they can offer help, that they're there every day, like 5 days a week from 8 to 4, whatever their hours are. And so that child has consistency. And a lot of children who are sexually exploited or abused don't have consistency. Life is sporadic, life is chaotic, and to have someone that you see every day who knows how to respond and knows how to help you, that's going to increase the likelihood of success for the child.
There's a difference between what adults want to talk to kids about and what they talk about amongst themselves. And is this something that you feel like is a topic that people, if they're not going through it, they know about it?
Definitely. When we did the workshop at the middle school, at one of the middle schools, kids were pretty open. I sat in one of the workshops, and kids said, hey, so-and-so is going through this right now. You should talk to her. I know someone, that this happened to. Somebody came up to me and asked me to do that. So kids, if you frame it in a way that it's interactive and it's not like some lecture on, or some scare tactics, create activities where they can actually have a dialogue and you can be an adult in the room kind of monitoring and making sure everything's okay. Teens are pretty open.
How do you assess that this is working?
So we're basically like gathering data. We hadn't gathered data before. And so with gathering the data and knowing, you know, hey, this kid has been sexually exploited, we're able to track which interventions that they're getting. And we can look back at like attendance like the year before and see if it's improved, or we can look back and see, has this child ever accessed any of our services in OUSD? And I think for us, success right now is looking like connecting kids with adults and connecting kids with interventions.
That was Cynthia DeMond talking with KLW's Liz Mack. DeMond is the CSEC lead for the Oakland Unified School District. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba, and now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
This is burning money and as part of the offering so that they can use it in the other side of the world.
It's a sound you can hear every spring when Chinese families around the world observe Qingming, or in English, Tomb Sweeping Day. It's a day when families pay respect to their ancestors by cleaning grave sites and bringing offerings of paper money and paper clothes to burn. We sent KALW's Liz Mack to the Mountain View Cemetery in Oakland to tell us more.
It's early in the day, and there's dozens of Chinese families on this hillside overlooking the bay. We're in one of the two Chinese sections of the cemetery, where people are gathered around their family plots. They're cleaning up their ancestors' grave markers by sweeping them, trimming back overgrown grass, and re-outlining engravings with gold pen to make them look fresh and new again. Some are burning offerings in red tin cans. Others praying with incense.
Hi, good morning.
Dou san.
Candy Lau works here with a lot of Chinese families. If a loved one passes away, she's the person to talk to.
So you know a lot of these people?
Yeah. Some of them is my client, you see?
Oh, so all these trash cans are for people to light fires and light burn
yeah.
the money?
That's a burning can. Yeah.
Hey, dou san la. Dou san. Hi.
Lau's looking for families who'd feel comfortable speaking with us. She says up to 500 people come to Mountain View to observe Qingming, but it's a private moment for every family.
The family, they come to the cemetery to pay the respect to the loved one. It's a good karma. That's why we take care of our ancestors, afterlife, and my children. They will take care of me when one day I pass away. Yeah, that's what we believe.
After a few tries, we meet the Ying family.
Hi, I'm Liz.
Okay. My name is Nelson. Last name is Ing, N-G.
And which ancestors are you paying respect to?
It's my grandmother and my father. These are my nieces here. And then my son and my nephew and then my daughter. That's my sister over there, my sister-in-law. My brother is coming over with my mom and my nieces as well.
Hi, guys. So what are your names?
Oh, Jocelyn Ng.
Catherine Ng.
Elizabeth Teo. Mm-hmm. Cousins.
Yeah, we're all cousins.
And so what are you holding in your hand right now?
I don't think it's...
Incense.
Yeah, incense.
And do you know what it's for?
Actually, honestly, I don't really know.
It's Uncle Nelson.
What is this? What is this, Dad?
This is incense.
Yeah.
Well, what's it for?
Okay, you light the incense, and then you show to the ancestors that you're here. This is the first thing that we do. Okay?
Okay.
That's why we do this.
So what is your grandma saying right now?
So she's telling my aunt and my dad to go first.
Each person takes turns paying their respects to the dead. Three generations of extended family. one by one.
You kneel down on that.
She points to a spot in front of the grave. There's a protocol to how you do this. You take burning incense, you bow three times, and then you stick that incense into the ground nearby.
You put the incense in with two hands in the ground.
Through two hands.
We pray to them, we kneel down, we first set up all the things with all the offering.
Offerings like big packages filled with paper replicas of fake money and clothing. Stuff ancestors can use in the afterlife. And if you really want to get fancy, you can burn paper iPhones and Gucci bags.
This is burning money and as part of the offering so that they can use it in the other side of the world.
Burning paper objects is how you make sure your ancestors have what they need, like sending them care packages, like an otherworldly UPS. It's something the Ying family has been doing for generations.
So you guys realize that one day you guys are going to be the ones in charge?
Yes.
Do you feel, like, prepared?
Nope. Yes.
Nope.
I do.
Okay, you can be
the boss, but yeah. She feels the most prepared.
We're going to teach them how the traditional way and personalize it a little bit. And
the way our parents taught us.
And the way their parents taught them. For Cross Currents, this is Liz Mack.
That story was co-produced by KALW's Jeremy Dalmas. Our winner this week is Grecian Goki. Congratulations on getting the answer exactly right and also on having a great name. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. And in the spirit of honoring people who have gone on to the other side, we wanted to pay our respects to Prince, who died earlier today. I'll let KALW's Luisa Cardosa tell you about what his music means to her.
Any song is belly danceable. My name is Luisa Cardosa. My favorite song is Kiss by Prince. I could be in the worst mood in the world, and if that song comes on, I have to crank it. I was belly dancing in a class. When it came time to choreograph my piece for a dance party, that was my go-to. The costume that I wore for it, I made from scratch. Very glitzy, it was very glittery, lots of sequins, lots of fringe. It just makes me feel good and reminds me that even if I'm feeling down, I am beautiful and sexy and powerful. Kiss.
That was KALW Audio Academy member Luisa Cardosa with a tribute to Prince, who passed away today. Prince had many fans here in the KALW newsroom. One of them is myself. So rest in peace and thank you for the incredible music.
Yeah, I want to be your fantasy.
Maybe you could be mine. You just leave it all up to me. We could have a good time.
Our team includes Shireen Adil, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ian Lewis, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Raja Shah, and Stephen Short. Today's show is engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Cheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.